Hello, this is Denise Yon, and welcome to the Brand is Business Bites podcast. The Brand is Business Bites podcast gives you a taste of insights and information about brands, businesses, and the people who work on them. It's available on iTunes. For more stuff for your brain to chew on, please visit my website at deniseleeyon.com.
Hello and welcome to today's podcast, which features an interview with Ben McConnell. Ben is principal at Ant's Eye View, and he is the co-author of two books on customer loyalty, Citizen Marketers, When People Are the Message, and also Creating Customer Evangelists, How Loyal Customers Become a Volunteer Sales Force. Ben has been named as one of the 50 most influential online marketers and co-authors the Church of the Customer blog, which I know is very popular. So, Ben, I am so excited to have you. Thank you very much for being a part of this call.
Oh, thanks, Denise. It's great to be here and chatting with you.
Great. Well, I'm going to launch right into it and ask you a little bit about your perspective on employees, which I know is a little bit different, but your book and your blog talk about customers as evangelists for brands, and I'm curious about your perspective on employees as evangelists for brands. Should companies view their employees as brand evangelists? What do you think?
Well, absolutely. I mean, if you want to have customer evangelists, you first have to have employee evangelists. You really can't have one without the other. And all of the evidence that we've ever looked at with organizations and brands that have very strong, passionate, loyal, long-lasting evangelists or influencers, they are the brands and organizations that have demonstrated that they know how to build very strong employee loyalty. So I think when you begin, you don't necessarily view your employees as automatic evangelists. I think you have to view them as potential evangelists. Companies have to work just as hard, if not harder, to maintain their love, their loyalty of employees versus customers. I mean, after all, being an evangelist is really an ongoing affirmation process, much the same way people go to religious services every day or every week.
Right.
So it takes a lot of listening and adjustments to ensure that a company is really doing right by its employees and helping maintain that sense of spirit, camaraderie, and eventually evangelism.
Right, right. Well, okay, and so actually could you talk a little bit more about that and maybe some specific steps or specific advice that you would have for a company that wanted to, foster employee evangelism and kind of build employee evangelism?
Well, like any other process of engagement, I think it always begins with listening. It's understanding what people think, what people believe, and gathering this feedback process, too. Like, what are we doing really right, and where are the areas that we need to improve upon? And allowing employees to have this sense of ownership. There may be a literal ownership stake, of course, with a company, but more of an emotional ownership. How are employees able to contribute to the ongoing success of the broader organization at large? Mm-hmm. So that's all part of listening, and then taking that information, taking that knowledge, and then feeding it back into the larger organization and interacting with it and making it part of the culture. Mm-hmm. And then from that, it's then building into an action plan. Okay, so here's what we continually hear from our employees about our culture and the way that we do stuff and how we need to do stuff, and here's how we're going to take action on it. So it's this kind of continuous, virtuous circle of listening, applying, and then remeasuring and ensuring that a company is always engaged in this continuous process of improvement.
Right, right. So it's not like a one-time thing. It's an ongoing process.
If it's not ongoing, then it eventually will, lose some of its steam, lose a lot of its luster, and probably start breaking down. And then also, the employees will notice this as well. Like, well, you used to be pretty involved of, you had this one opportunity or this one program to understand what we said, and then you kind of made some changes, but not really. And so now should we really believe you?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. So there's an aspect of kind of authenticity and integrity in building employee evangelism that is the same as in building customer evangelism, it sounds like.
Yeah, you know, there can be implications of boosterism or astroturfing, this kind of fakery going on if employees are in constant promotion mode. If they're constantly out there promoting, especially in social media circles, the brand or the product or really the opportunity. But I think it's probably very important to say that promotion is sales. And sales is not really the right mode, I think, when it comes to an employee. Mm-hmm. Promotion is the outcome, but it's certainly not the purpose. I think the purpose of any employee who wants to evangelize a company is to help. Mm-hmm. Being helpful is what spreads real, authentic buzz more than anything. Mm-hmm. And being helpful means trying to solve somebody's problem, trying to solve somebody's issue, whether it's directly related to the product, the brand, or the company, or maybe it's, you know, indirectly related too. There can be great benefit and evangelism that arises out of helping somebody solve a problem for which you get no tangible outcome or benefit from it at all.
Right, right. So do you see employee evangelism and customer evangelism like working together? I mean, is there a way to integrate them, or is the way that they naturally kind of integrate together?
Well, I think they can be closely aligned, but typically only if there's a very clear company vision, there's well-articulated values that the company demonstrates every day, and a culture that's codified consistently with rituals, practices that unify the true believers, both the employees and customers. So if employees are saying, well, if only those, you know, sucker customers knew the real story of what happens here when they, you know, seeing all the great stories being written, the blog posts or the tweets about, oh, how I love company X, I'm such an evangelist. You know, that's not very sustainable. And what happened with Krispy Kreme? Krispy Kreme 6-7 years ago was the darling of the entire world and was on the cover of Fortune, and it was the word of mouth company of the decade practically, but you know, there were a lot of financial shenanigans happening behind the scenes at that company, and it eventually fell very far off of its pedestal of evangelism, and now it's, you know, it's not really talked about in anywhere close to the same vein as it was back then.
Right. Right. For Krispy Kreme or any other company that's kind of fallen, you know, off this, do you have any, advice for how they might repair what damage has been done and be able to get back to a stronger position in terms of customer evangelism?
Well, the story I like to tell, because I think it's relevant and instructive, is the David Letterman story. So you remember David Letterman probably about 4 months ago just announced on
yes.
a show that he was the victim of an extortion plot.
Yes.
And how, you know, all of this, because based on his relationships that he's having with women on the show. And he said, well, that is true. And I'm a jerk, and I've made a lot of mistakes. And he basically did a very public mea culpa and did it in such a way that he was both disarming, funny, but very real and direct to the point.
Mm-hmm.
And then said how he, you know, felt also wronged by this extortion plot. But he was very upfront about it, and I think it was really instructive for any company, any brand, any organization that finds itself in a similar position where somehow they've been caught or they've made a mistake or something is, you know, they've demonstrated some sort of wrongdoing. They just need to be direct, upfront, be willing to make fun of themselves as long as it takes for their, you know, stupidity or whatever it is, and then try to move on from that. The more that you try to be upfront and clear about it, and try to inject some humor at your own expense at it, the more likely you are to get people onto your side. Because people love other people who are, you know, willing and able to make fun of themselves.
Right. It seems to make them, you know, more real, and just, you know, that they're not taking themselves so seriously that they're not willing, they're not afraid to admit that they made a mistake.
Right, because that becomes more of a personal quality that people will admire. It's like, I wish I could make fun of myself like that in public. And so it becomes an admirable trait in many regards as well.
Well, you know, it's interesting tying this point in, you know, kind of being able to make fun at your own expense as well as the point you made earlier about being helpful. It sounds like companies, you know, in a way, you need to be, you know, the people that people want to be friends with. And, you know, like, you want to be the kind of person that you'd want to hang out with and have a relationship with.
That's a really valid point. The more that a company tries to humanize itself, the better its chances of really developing a fan base and developing an influential fan base, as opposed to being the type of corporate speak organization for which there are no people really representing it. There's just images of stock photography or this closed, monolithic, one corporate speak voice.
Right.
I mean, who identifies with that? What
right.
person identifies with that? Maybe a couple of titans on Wall Street, but even so, who cares about them so much?
Right.
I mean, the larger customer base is really who, you know, people are trying to appeal to. And the more that you resemble the voice of your customers, the more likely people are to, yeah, want to be friends with you, or at least be friendly with you.
What can someone do if they're working in an organization where, you know, there is kind of this top-down kind of corporate voice and not a lot of freedom to express, you know, your own, I wouldn't say your personal personality, but not a lot of freedom to express yourself as a human, as an individual. You know, is there anything that, like, an employee can do to influence their culture, their organizational culture, or, like, move them along somehow so that they're not just stuck in this one way of communicating?
Well, they can certainly try to gather as much evidence as they can along the way of how personalized communications with customers, friendly, open, inviting communications as opposed to the more corporate, monolithic speak, produce some sort of results. So perhaps maybe it's an email or it's some other communication corporate-wise that generated a response from a customer or a series of customers who said, wow, I really loved how this piece of information was talking to me as if I were a real person.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one aspect. And another aspect is really to, you know, try a test, convince the upper echelons to do something in a small, very discreet area of perhaps a group of customers for which you're going to try more personalized communication and see how it goes. It won't go out to the broader customer set, but see how it goes, see what kind of response it gets. Measure its response rate versus the control group of the larger customer set. And if there's a better ROI out of it, then that should be a pretty good rationale for, you know, expanding it out to a larger customer segment.
Right.
And then finally, failing that, for a new job.
Right.
Companies are slow moving.
Yes.
And, you know, the bigger the company, the slower it moves and the less likely it is to adjust its culture, you know, and its cultural DNA.
Hmm. Yeah, sad but true. Yeah. Well, good. Before I let you go, I wanted to ask you about your latest book, Citizen Marketers, if you could tell us a little bit about it and where people can get it.
Well, Citizen Marketers documents the early rise of social media and how social media began to change the media landscape, both for marketers and public relations professionals. So it's an early look at not only social media, but also the role of citizen marketers. Those are the people who are, you know, people describe today as influencers or evangelists, who kind of take ownership of a brand online and start creating content around it. They might create communities, they might create fan sites, and become an extension of that brand online and generate enthusiasm for it. So it's available certainly at Amazon and Barnes & Noble online, and then it came out about 3 years ago, so you still might find it in a few bookstores. Co-authored by Jackie Huba,
great.
Myself.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Ben. I appreciated your insights. It's been great.
Thank you, Denise.
All right. I'll talk to you soon.
That's it for today. Thanks for listening to the Brand as Business Bites podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes so your brain will always be filled with good stuff to chew on. For more information or to contact me directly, please visit my website at deniseleeyan.com. Take care and thanks again.